Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is the Improv Chronicle podcast. I'm Lloydie. You may have been in a show where everyone else came out on stage doing a great American, Canadian, British accent, and you were there thinking, oh boy, I can't do that. Or maybe someone just endowed you as being a famous figure during your scene. What do you do? It can be a high-pressure situation for a lot of improvisers. So how useful are accents and impressions in improv? And how can we use them well and, importantly, respectfully? During the height of the COVID pandemic, one of the things I watched online was a series of impressions videos called Celebrity Advice, made by UK celebrity impressionist, actor, director, and improviser Ty Campbell. And I wondered, what made him want to do impressions on stage?
I think I've always done like funny voices, even when I was little. But I think it was when I'd be doing a show, an improv show, basically. So I'd be doing a gig, and anytime somebody would play like a pre-existing celebrity in that group, it would usually just end up being me. And then I started to feel like, oh, okay, this is actually quite good, and I'd be getting quite a good response from the audience. Also, I do remember one particular time when it was a scene that was in the White House. So I was like, cool, I'll play Obama. And then, yeah, it just went off and then people really enjoyed it. So I thought maybe I'll put some more time into this. And I thought maybe I'll put some more time into other characters too. And then, yeah, it turns out, yeah, it's a thing.
How useful do you find doing these impressions in improv scenes?
It always depends on the scene, really, because it kind of has to be organic. It can't be forced. And I think in a regular scene, if that person just happens to come up, great. But otherwise, you know, I can't really shoehorn it in. Because I actually do an improvised impression show, so that is all based on impressions. So I get to really stretch my legs that way.
And how does that show work?
It's quite fun. It's fun and weird. So basically how it works is a random member of the audience gets to volunteer or get picked out, and they get a list of 30 impressions, 30 celebrities, fictional characters, well-known characters that I can do, and then they stand at the side of the stage. And then the audience get to pick the location, usually, you know, like a cafe, the beach, but a place where people can hang out, basically. And then I will play a scene, or play a number of scenes, where I will play one to about four characters simultaneously, but I don't know who I'm going to be playing next.
So if you're me, you can't do impressions or accents. How do you go about doing a celeb?
Okay, well, first of all, my first rule in impressions is that you're not doing that person, you're doing your version of that person. So it's not wrong. It doesn't matter what you do, it's not wrong because it's your interpretation of somebody. So if you want to do Madonna as, you know, a Cockney with a deep voice, that's Madonna.
Now that is a fun workaround. But Ty is really good at impressions and he puts a lot of work into them.
I can spend anywhere between a day to a month to trying to figure out a character before I would perform them in front of an actual audience. Yeah, and what I do with that is I look at, say, one video. I might look at a range, but I'll find this one video, and I don't change the video. I just look at this one video. So, say, one video of Denzel Washington in an interview, And then what I do is I don't do the person as they are, because turns out it's not as fun and the audiences don't love it as much. So instead, I find one characteristic, one small element, and then I stretch it out. And then I make that the character. And then that kind of helps to build them. So say George Bush, I play as, because they're not just an impression, it's also a character and it's also a very specific point of view. So for me, when I play George Bush is a child and I play him as a child. And that, yeah, and also if people find that funny, he's like, you know, he's not allowed to have like a knife because he's not responsible enough to cut his own meat, which is funny, you know, if he was president. I play Obama like a parent. And sometimes I play against type, like I might have Gandalf talking about rap or Darth Vader trying to give father-son advice.
Talking to time made me realize part of the work of doing a good impression is doing the work. But I was also really interested in his idea of playing the celebrity how you want to play them. That seemed liberating and played into the whole idea of there not being wrong choices in improv. Shortly after talking to Ty, I spoke to a Nottingham-based improviser I know called John Hardy. John co-runs a team called Epic, who do an improvised movie, and has a duo called Honey Badger. And he's just been on an accents course, which he was raving about. So we grabbed a coffee.
Okay, John's just approaching me, and I feel the need to greet him in some kind of accent. Oh, hey, how are you?
Good.
Great. Good. I'm doing an accent. Can you not know?
No, it's good.
It's not, is it? Now, you've been taking a course in accents. Why did you feel like you wanted to introduce accent work into what you do?
So there was two reasons to look at the accent work. So there's my comedy. I wanted to start doing characters when I was on stage, and I find a different accent puts me in a different character. But also, I wanted to stop being so lazy with my voice and so lazy with my words. And I knew that having someone listen to every word and pull me up on every letter would be really good for everything I do in presenting, not just accents.
You say you find like a character, an accent puts you into a character. How does that work exactly? Can you break down how that happens for you?
Yeah, so an accent will... It'll move me into an area of the country that will remind me of something that's happened to me before. So it's not necessarily the accent itself. I know that some people struggle where an accent like would give some regional stereotypes, but that's not what it does for me. It reminds me of an incident. So if I'm in Birmingham, I worked in a gym, I met lots of students, I remember the students and the personalities, and then that might be something I can hook into for a character and build from. If I stay in my own accent, I'm always the guy from Mansfield. So, and then my humour will be the same and my reference points will be the same. So I find an accent really useful to take me to a different place. When I'm a character, if I can remember somebody or a circumstance, then that creates a want or a need, and then that helps me then bring it into the scene.
That sounds incredibly useful. There are probably some accents that are more problematic in context than others. Like, how do you navigate that?
For starters, I'm lucky that I can't do any controversial accents. So I'm really lucky that I can swerve that. I don't think doing an accent is necessarily bad in acting, where there's a script and there's a requirement. But I think when you're on stage, you're a writer. So if you, I know you're improvising, but if you choose to write in an accent, then really you should have done some research about the place you're speaking about and the people. And really, I think especially in today's climate, it's not necessarily going to be the best choice. My get out is nearly always, oh, I've lived here for a while, but I come from. And then I can choose my accent for wherever my scene partner's trying to put me.
And that's really good, because that means you can be sensitive in terms of culture, but you're also able to make sense in terms of the scene.
And I can only play from what I know. So whenever I've done an improv course, it's always go from your own experience. So I've always been like a white Midlands bloke. So I find it really hard to then be able to impose that into another character. And it's not that I wouldn't play another character necessarily, but I'd be reluctant to build, especially when I thought I don't have the right or the expertise or the background or the knowledge to do this. So I've seen scenes where people play a character from an area and don't change their voice, don't change their accent. And that works really well. It almost feels respectful that they've just said, well, I'll just handle where I'm playing, but I won't make an effort to try and hit a stereotype so you know. And I kind of like that approach.
Like any tool, using it responsibly is crucial. Ty Campbell again.
Not everyone understands the difference between like an accent that seems to be more acceptable, like doing a Scottish one, or ones that say can make audiences or other players feel a bit more uncomfortable. And I think the easiest way to kind of understand that is in this scenario, in this like actual world, who has oppressed who? Because if there's a group that has been oppressed by another, and then it seems like they're being mocked by them by having their accents or whatever kind of recreated on stage. But also there is a difference between a character and a character who is supposed to be funny. So obviously there aren't many performers of color in improv. And say, so doing a show where, for example, I would put on a Jamaican accent, some people might think, oh, they're doing a Jamaican accent. That's not something I see usually. That must be funny. That's the funny thing. And it's like, no. That's just me doing like one of my grandparents. So it's that kind of trying to create the distance between the accent and, you know, the thing that's supposed to be funny. Because I have talked to before about the people who were replicating on stage, especially if it's like somebody that people already know. I actually did see a group, an all-white group, played members of Destiny's Child. But what was actually surprising how they did it was they didn't try to change their accents or didn't try and sass about anything. They actually just kept their own English accents, which meant, because I think the characters came up so that it was the easiest way for them to kind of work through it. So it was good to see people kind of being more sensible, I guess, or having that kind of sensibility of how to kind of approach that.
So after hearing John rave about the accents course he'd been on, I asked him if he'd put me in touch with his teacher, Cooper Shaw. Cooper's an actor, writer, filmmaker, and dialect coach. She specializes in teaching dialects and character voices for improvisers. So I asked her, if we're using accents well, what do they give improvisers and improvised scenes?
So many things. I find that it can be helpful just in giving you another element to step even further outside of yourself and just be another character. And a lot of actors find it, and improvisers. I sort of use the term actor and improviser interchangeably a lot of times. So a lot of actors find it a little bit more, I guess, less anxiety inducing to have another layer of a persona to put on. So they feel even less like, oh, this is just me up on stage, but now I'm changing my physicality as well as my voice. So it can just kind of help to make things feel a little bit more creative and less in steeped in their own reality.
How much of this, I think of it as a kind of voice thing and an auditory thing, but how much of this is a physical process?
Oh, it's a huge physical process. Process.
Oh, that's okay.
It's okay. It'll pass, right?
Yeah.
It's a very big physical process because a lot of changing the quality of the sound roots itself in what are you changing physically in order to get the sound to behave that way. And then it's a difference between, well, do I want to change the sound to be able to jump in and do an improv scene, or do I want to change the sound and be able to maintain it for the duration of a TV series? or, you know, and then I would coach people differently. And you know, recommend, if you really want it to feel natural, I recommend talking in that accent for 24 hours a day as much as you possibly can until it's like part of your DNA. For me, and I know a lot of people who work differently, but I know for me, once I am creating a character, I need to find a different voice for that character that feels less like myself. Otherwise, I feel too much like, especially in improv, I feel too much like I'm getting on stage and improvising as myself. And then it's like, I don't feel as much freedom to let the story go where it wants to go, unless I have that extra layer. And so I feel like the accent is really, it's a lot for to do with character. So there's a sidebar of a story, and I feel really a little hesitant to tell this story, but I'm going to.
Okay.
So I was asked to do a podcast, a storytelling podcast, which shall remain nameless. And the whole concept of the storytelling podcast was they did not want any of the actors to do accents. They wanted, but yet I had this script where I had to do several different characters, but I wasn't allowed to do accents for any of them. And I know other actors who have worked for this podcast who do that quite effectively. I can't do it unless I can do an accent. I'm like, there's only so many times that I can like make a voice slightly more nasally or make it a little deeper or make it a little higher pitched. But like, if I remove that extra tool from my toolbox, I feel like I end up sounding the same no matter what I do. I'm like, how do I be a different character if I don't have a different accent to do? I had like so much anxiety when I was asked to do this thing. I was like, I can't. It's going to be awful. Anyway.
So I'm sure it was fine.
They never asked me back again.
Ah.
But, you know, it's like lesson learned. For me, my strength is doing the different, like full on doing different accents, not just the voices.
For those of us who improvise and are looking to get better at accents, what can we do immediately to get better?
I always recommend that people just watch and listen to as much content as they can that has that accent and just listen and repeat and listen and repeat. Also, because it makes the quote unquote homework fun, because you're like, oh, wait a minute. I'm trying to teach myself something, and at the same time, I get to watch Ozark on Netflix. or My Cousin Vinny, or, you know, any of those things. Just consume content and listen and repeat and make it fun for yourself.
Next time on the Improv Chronicle podcast. Status. Some schools of thought talk about status in improv a lot, but what do we mean when we're asking someone to play high or low status? And how much do we need it to build characters and onstage dynamic? The Improv Chronicle podcast is produced and hosted by me, Lloydie James Lloyd. You can help the podcast right now. Subscribe and rate us on your favorite podcast app. Also, check out the show notes for this episode and find out about the current projects the contributors are involved in, and even take an accent class. And if you have an idea for a possible episode, get yourself to improvchronicle.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered